You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Yo.
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering anime that aired between, I've got to scroll back because we're now in June, the 25th of May to the 31st of May, 2020. And we're going to start off with Super Shiro, episode 33. I've not written the description.
I just told it to you literally 2 minutes ago.
The trash house in the pond.
Yes.
That's it. I have written it in the, weirdly, the stream notes, but not actually in my own notes, because the fans have dropped like hours before the recording. So
it's a good thing it's short.
In this episode, we've got to go to, I did take a screenshot of the location they go into in this one. It is the muddy waters between men and women in the 33rd district.
They'll work it out.
Which is a pond. And, that's where
it's
the bone is.
Ponds. I'm guessing it used to be like a lover's destination or something.
Yeah.
But obviously it really went to shit somewhere down the line.
That. I know. Well, just lingering regrets, lingering sadness.
Lingering rubbish!
Oh yeah.
And a lingering snapping turtle. Looks like a refugee from the first anime they made in Aizuken.
And much like a Pokemon just talks by saying his own name. He's just going, Kame.
Yeah, so he is the possessor of the bone. He's wearing it on a necklace around his neck. And, it's up to Dekapu and Shiro to try and get off him. And Dekapu, I did like that, his immediate thing is, we've got to clean up this filthy pond. Cause the turtle's living in a pile of garbage.
I mean, like, maybe he wouldn't be such a bad president. He's very proactive. It's like, I want a thing here, but I could accidentally make the world a better place by doing it. So, yeah. He quickly comes back with a elephant hoover, I suppose. I feel like that's a thing he's done before. It seems like a thing he's done before.
Yeah, he's had it on, I think, wheels before.
Yeah, this is obviously like a submersible one. Yeah.
He's been shrank down that thing more times than I can count. Even though probably only a handful of times, but there you go.
And then it breaks down into a contest between Shiro and the turtle. This is after Dekapu ends up getting wedged inside a glass bottle. In basically, God, what do they call it when you make art out of junk?
Oh.
Like outsider art.
That's
it.
It's not
found art. It's, I know the thing you're talking about.
Yeah. Outsider art is the phrase I was trying to, my brain was struggling to find in the previous half hour before we started the podcast.
Yeah.
Or you're just making like piles and then they start making the piles into interesting shapes, I suppose.
Yeah. I do dislike that term because anybody can be an artist. You don't need to be an outsider to do it. Because, you know, the turtle could be an artist. Superhero dog could be an artist. That's proven in the British furry cartoon, which is definitely real.
Yes. So, I've just noticed another mistake in the stream, but I'll deal with that. Well, the rest of you guys tell me what happened in the rest of the episode.
I'm doing more elaborate things. I'm building, you know, I throw them together and it's making a car and it's making a train and it's making a plane and it's making a rocket and then we're getting carried away. Let's just like dig around in this stuff until we find the bone and then just build up two huge stacks next to each other. But as they're doing so, the waters are cleared away to find the bone.
The fish have come back. Nature's coming, right? Nature's returning. Isn't that the meme, I think?
It is.
And Shiro was okay. Oh, you are okay to give me this bone now because you can see there is something more greater and grander that we have achieved here that's far beyond the value of this mere bubble bone, even though it's got a gorgeous, elegant, and wild fragrance.
Yeah, the turtle's happy enough to give it away because he doesn't suggest this. I'm kind of inferring this from what happens. He's kind of living in the now rather than living in the past, which is true to the bone kind of thing.
Yeah, man. What's precious here, you know, even though it was not a bone this time, it wasn't a real one, the precious memory still survives.
I mean, it didn't. It exploded, but... but yeah, the turtle seems happy. I did like Shiro at the start of it as well, where he's getting into the water and he's like, he's, you know, he's testing it with his toes, he's splashing a bit in his belly so he can get used to the temperature. I was just like, oh yeah, you got to do stretches beforehand. It's like, whoa, you don't want to pull a hammy while swimming, like, you know.
He's done that before as well, before.
I know, it's just fun to see water every time.
Yeah.
The little bit of warm-up exercises.
I also like that when we first meet Shiro in the episode, he's just staring at a picture of him and Shin-chan.
That was really nice. Yeah, it's like, ah, happy memories. So it kind of ties into the end of he knows the value of a photo of a better time.
Yes.
Oh. Well, just a memory, you know. The photo the photo's a good reminder, but the memory would always be there, hopefully, unless you...
Yeah, yeah, the photo's like just a physical manifestation of it.
It's getting me blows to the head, which a lot of cartoon characters are prone to.
But yeah, I did like this is the first one where it was like, clearly isn't the bone. And it's not too late, but he still presses the button.
Well, I mean, like in terms of the story, it would make sense for this to be born. Because it's like, yeah, it meant a lot to the turtle, and I really earned it this time. And it's like, it's not going to be, though.
No, his paw was already on the way. And, yes, explosion one more time. Then we've got Woodpecker Detective's Office, Episode 7. What was this one called? I've not written it down. But Dwayne has sent me a message in the chat, which should tell me what it was.
Gentleman Thief.
That's it. I should have known. I could have, if I just took a moment, I'd have remembered it.
I feel like they say Gentleman Thief multiple times this episode.
They do. This is another, it's a good episode in this series because it's a crime is solved, a crime which has not taken place, and the crime which has taken place is not solved, except maybe it was solved.
It might have been solved off screen.
Yes.
They're so ineffectual. It's really funny. Like, they're very smart, very good at coming up with crazy plans and solving crazy plans, but not, like, getting anything practically done.
Yes. My favorite bit is when he goes and sees the youngest member of the cast. Kin Daiichi is the one doing the detective work this time. So what's happened is we open with a businessman being interviewed by a newspaper reporter who's being very rude, and then he wanders off to use his toilet, and the guy rings up the newspaper to complain about how rude this reporter is, and they're like, we don't have a reporter by that name. And yeah, the reporter's disappeared and he's taken all the wages with him. 5,000 yen. Enough to live on for the rest of your life.
I really like the way they keep mentioning the amounts of money and, like, inflations of pitch, isn't it? Ah, dear.
And there's a 500 yen reward to find out where the money's gone, because they've already caught the thief, because a very thorough detective, I think we've seen him before, he's the guy who looks like Poirot, and basically, the guy had left a cigarette behind and he'd gone all through the city trying to find the one tobacconist's.
It's like a very specific Egyptian brand of cigarettes. Yes. So I was like, okay, this is going to be...
Yes, Figaro, because then we get the detective wandering around going, Figaro, Figaro, Figaro. then Ishikawa's like, I kind of want to... I'd like to get that 500 yen so I can pay all, I can almost pay everybody back the money I owe them. And he also really wants to try one of these cigarettes. He's coughing a lot already at the start of this episode.
I got an awful cough. A cigarette will put out that fire.
Exactly. Mm. And then we get close ups of everyone else smoking cigarettes as well.
He
borrows, he doesn't borrow money. Kinda actually goes, gives him some money and said, there you go, you don't have to pay me back, just go and buy yourself a cigarette. And so when Kinji actually comes back, he finds a 2-sen coin? And it's the change from the cigarette. But then he notes something wrong, is up with it. And he asks Ishikawa where did this coin come from? And then he said, explains it's the change. And then Kindachi's still mad at Ishikawa over the ON business. And then we get to Kindachi's detective work, where he discovers that the coin is a trick coin used by a magician, and it opens up and it's got a note inside it.
I did like the reversal of seeing that same thing again, but from his point of view, because first time you see it, he seems really standoffish and shitty with his friend. But the second time around, he's like embarrassed and he's trying to hide. He's trying to, I'm going to solve this mystery on my own kind of fucking thing. It's a lot more, it's a lot less harsh the second yes. time around, I guess.
And so he goes to borrow Hirai's intelligence, which I was find amusing. Is like, yeah, the one guy who's the smart analytical mind is the youngest of the writers.
The rest of them are poets. That's not very analytical.
Yes. But, and there's loads of bits all throughout the episodes with the rest of them, suddenly realizing Akutagawa was there saying something gloomy.
That was really funny. He's like, oh shit, he was here the whole time. Like, he scares them when he just appears or slash was there the entire time.
Yeah, yeah. He's in
what a downer, man.
He's in the milk bar with them and, milk hall. I was like, I don't know. Is milk halls and milk bars are a thing I know the name of, and I've never really understood exactly what they are. In this case, it seems specifically for getting milk, because that's Ishikawa's excuse for being too sick to go to work, but still hanging out at the cafe. Is that the milk will do him good. Then they go to the baths, and they're surprised that he's there again.
Yeah, he's not in the bath with them. He's getting the rub down kind of thing. He's not at the same booth as them. He's in the next booth. Yes. Yeah, but he's always near enough to overhear the conversation.
Well, yeah.
Slash is following them around. I'm not
he's
sure.
He's just this gloomy teenager who's following them around. And it always ends up saying, we're in a grove. We're really in a grove this time. He takes it to Hirai. Hirai decodes the note. He thinks that Kindaishi must have figured it out already, because it's a very simple code. And the clue is in the coin. It was a two, whatever the denomination was, and therefore you just exchange the characters for the next... Oh, you just read every second character. And that reads out the code. And the code is a name and to pick up... fake money from the theatrical supplies shop. And this is where Kindachi goes, that must be it. He must have taken the money, snuck into the theatrical supplies shop, replaced the theatrical money with the money he'd stolen. Then he would come in disguise as the name that had ordered the theatrical money, pay the 500 yen or whatever it is for the theatrical money, and then he'd make off with 5,000 yen. It's a genius plan. And
they basically keep his money, his fake Monopoly money there until he came to pick it up.
And he's in the cartoon, he's explaining this to Ishikawa because he's already got the money and he's gone, I found the money. This is how I found it. Aren't you proud of me? And Ishikawa is proud of him. And then he points out, maybe you want to take a closer look at that money.
Well, before saying to him, it's like, hey, you sure you want to fucking turn in that reward? Because, you know, the gangs are all probably looking for you and they're probably going to fuck you up. And once he gets out of jail, he's going to kill you, that kind of shit. And then it's like, I'm only taking the piss. Take a look at the money. Take a look at your funny money.
Yes, and he takes a look at the play money, and it's got his own face, but with a beard on it. And Kindaishi's like, what? It was all a prank Ishikawa's playing. He goes, yes, the fake name. Just transpose those characters. It's your name. Ha ha ha. And he's like, how much did this cost to do? It's 500 yen. And then you're left as the viewer like, okay, because he claims he doesn't know where the 5,000 yen is. So has he actually solved the crime and got the 500 yen reward? Has he borrowed another 500 yen from somewhere?
Just for a very elaborate prank.
Yes.
Which does seem feasible for him, yeah.
And then we get some more information about there's been another murder which has revealed another scandal. A magician it looks like suicide, doesn't it? But Ishikawa thinks it's another murder. Because there's a note exposing a guy who is like an entertainment mogul. And yeah, Ishikawa's like, I think all these three things are connected. There's somebody who's committing these murders to expose not the people who are being murdered, but the people who are being murdered's employer. And And they go out for, where'd they go out? Back to the milk bar, are they? Or they've been to the milk bar and they're leaving. And then he starts coughing again and Kinda actually says, cause he's like coughed to, distract him earlier in the episode. And he's like, he thinks he's having him on again. But this time.
Oh, you're just trying to make me feel bad about you again. Yeah.
Yes. But this time he's coughing up blood, we see. So, yeah, not long for the world is Ishikawa. So when does he move back, in history? So he's employed at the Asahi Shimbun in 1909, which is where he is here. He moves back in 1911. So I guess it's sometime between 1909 and 1911 at this point. Yeah, he moves back home for health reasons. Yeah, they never mention in the story that he's married and has a wife.
I feel like they're stuck on the, I feel like I'm selling it light if I say bromance. But, yes.
I'm looking at his abbreviated biography on Wikipedia. I think he did not tend to mention that he was married around people either.
Okay. So he just didn't bring it up.
No, well, yes, so he was.
I mean, like, based on this character, it seems appropriate that he's being a dick like that.
Yeah. But the sense of things, he was, after he married, he then tried to womanize, after the fact. We'll see how that, I keep on wondering, like, who are these really weird people we see at the start of the, in the opening credits as well? How are they all going to play into it? It's like somebody in a mask with a cloak. I'm like, not many episodes. Oh no, is it a really long? I can't remember if this is 12 or 24.
I did notice in the opening this time. Yeah, the there's a flash with him in front of it, and the background keeps changing suddenly, and it's like each different case, as far as I can tell. Because one of them was the one where your one died in the room, and each one thought the other guy did it, kind of thing. But, I assume it's like just giving you a preview of things to come, including his imminent death.
Well, they definitely do that in the opening credits, don't they? Because he dissolves.
Yeah, for sure. They really lay it on thick there.
He becomes kid. I think the thing is, yes, if you're in Japan, he's a well-known poet and you know that he died young.
It's giving you like, it's a well-known enough thing, especially if you're watching this. It's like, yeah, you probably know who they are from history or from poetry literature class or something.
It's good for, there was some weird jumps, but I don't know whether that was the stream or the actual episodes. There seemed like some, but I think it might have been my stream. If you didn't notice any weird jumps, I assume it would just be my stream.
I got some weird jumps on Crunchyroll. I thought there was a poor video thing, but when I went back and checked, it was just the way it was loading. So could have been, yeah.
Yeah. But apart from that, it's still holding up under the pressure of current production circumstances. Then we've got something I did not watch. Fruits Basket, Season 2, Episode 8. Well, it's true.
Yes, it's true. Akira was here, and he's being a dick. What was that now? Yeah, it was just like some lingering awkwardness there. After Yuki kind of confided in Toru a bit on the beach. But she seems fine. Everyone else is fine. They're back having pancakes, but to get called away again. Everyone's going to come in and see Akito again, sort of left by themselves. Toru and Kyo to know the vices again for the afternoon.
And you get a few bits with Akita going, it's like, I'm taking them all away from her the whole time. And that's really good, because then she realized that I'm the one who has the power and she sucks and I'm great. Me big, she small, that kind of thing. And her manservant, au pair, whatever the fuck that guy is like, hey, doesn't she have Kyo there? And she's like, yeah, that guy's a monster. Who fucking cares about a monster? Don't be weird. Why would she be happy to be with a guy who's a literal fucking monster? Fuck that.
The Hattori, approaches her, says, sorry for being out of the house all the time, finally left by yourself, and You're worrying Arcturus. Oh no, grand, don't worry about us. I got time to make pancakes from here. Yo, this is all right. We'll be grand. No, you gotta do this stuff. And he's kind of like, oh, well, if Arcturus feels that way, maybe everyone else feels that way as well. You know, so I shouldn't be having them worry about me. I should be make sure I'm having fun and let's go to the beach, Kyo, and make sandcastles. What? Oh, okay. I never done this before. But you seem pretty bad at it. No, I'm not. You're just no fun, Kyo.
Yeah, and like the several times they're waiting for on their own for days, like their sandcastles are improving very slowly from just small mounds to like things with shape, I suppose.
Yeah. The lads have been released, so they're come onto the beach and they're having paddling around again. Again, the tourist says, "Hey, Yuki, you all right?" And said, "Oh yeah, I'm grand. Sorry about saying anything weird there the other night. But don't worry about it. Forget about it. I'm grand. I'm totally fine." But she was like, "No, well, no, don't mind about that. Whatever you were trying to get out there, it seemed really important and serious to do. It was like you definitely are right." Just kind of just thinking of how he was saying things, but he was even had a voice so low that even she couldn't perceive it, and he being right up close to her. I said, "No, I'm definitely all right. It's one thing I can tell you right now in a voice you can hear is that I am all right. I'm fine." Mm. And he seems pretty good because he seems to be back to his old ways. Kyo's got fucking, I hate an attitude of yours telling me to fucking go and meet up with fuck. Well, actually, no, Watsuyuki is saying, if you get called up to the house to talk with Akido, don't fly out to handle and make things worse for everybody else. And he says, fuck off with your small attitude. I hate the way you're all talking down to me like that. Who do you think you are? Someone's saying, I'm someone who's better than you. It's like, they got the old comedy duo back again. So maybe he is.
Yeah.
He is all right. What's it now as well? What else is there? Oh, there's a bit in between there that I can't think of. They're on the beach again. I guess they're just left alone in the house again. And Kyo and Togo go to the beach. And this time, Akido is going to come down this like just confront her and really just and shake it out of her. As earlier Akido was, you know, had heroin and was just kind of mocking him for, "Haha, you got dumped. But I love you, you big stupid idiot.
Also, you're stupid because you're the cow and you are only your fucking zodiac sign, nothing else."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Haru is just like brush it off the best he can, but he mentions that, "Hey, how about Toru meeting Corinna sometime? I mean, like, she's met the rest of the rest of the Zodiac family, and he's one of them." It's like, I don't have to do this because she's done it everybody else. Right? I'm the fucking boss around here. I say who gets to meet who around here. Whatever you've been up to, but this isn't the fucking rule that I had to follow. But then thinking, it could be fun to just go down here and just mess her shit up, you know, just like let her, just like.
Just rub it in that I'm the boss, yeah.
Let her meet everybody. Let her make friends with them all. And then when I take them all back away from her, she'll feel even worse. Yeah, yeah, that sounds a good idea. Yeah. But they're turning out on the beach then, and they're kind of just like trying to make sandcastles again. Then the conversation turns to the bracelet that Kyo that was wearing. It's like, he's kind of mentioned like, no, it feels like, you know, he hates wearing it because it feels like such like a burden on him. She asks, what's the thing that she made of? What's made of human bone? What?
Human bone, well, red beads are stained with blood. And it's the idea that he's carrying this weight of someone else had to sacrifice for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
His one isn't new. It was the one that was passed down, but still people died for that thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Or so the legend goes anyway, but he still feels that's affected his perception of himself very much. So it was how good, you know, cause he's being kind of cast out and spat upon, despised, by his own family for, you know, all of his life, pretty much. And he kind of wonders, is that way? You know, what use, what's worth is a life that's was given, was in exchange for somebody else's? Is that right? Am I right to be, am I allowed to feel any happiness or positivity? But she doesn't say a word, just grabs his hand, and then he just knows immediately, yeah, you get it. I'm going on about it again, like I have before, but you get it. I don't need to say it to you. And that's really nice at the moment, too.
We don't need to, like, platitudes and words. We get the characters who have that emotional connection, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's like seeing again, just Yuki's really kind of come more into himself, and he's gotten a lot more assertive and kind of bolder. He's not really admiring Toru from afar anymore. He's actually being, you know, getting up in close quarters with her, and he's kind of up there, but I feel like what's between with her and Keo seems to be a lot more genuine and warmer. It's just a lot more, just easier with them.
Yeah, it comes more naturally to him, I suppose, yeah.
Does Yuki feels, I don't know, he's been cracking on to her, it's like he's this flair for the dramatic, he's gotta like leave her off with a killer cool guy line. It feels a bit contrived.
Yeah, I mean, Keo, like,
it's easy.
Yeah, I felt like the thing with the Keo, they have this kind of heart to heart, they talk about how they're feeling, and then it's the situation is diffused by, because they're kneeling down on the beach making sandcastles and they got distracted, a big wave fucking washes over them. And he starts shouting at the sea, I'll fucking kill you kind of thing. And Toru laughs and it's just like, ah, yeah, it's all really natural to go from like that emotional thing to a thing of understanding to very stupid things. It feels very like, they feel more like people acting with people, that kind of way.
Yeah. And Toru's picking up on that is that, you know, they are having things, they have things inside they keep themselves, or they say it, but in a voice so quiet you can't even hear. But one day they might be able to, say it out loud, and do, well, I got things I haven't been able to say out loud just yet, but I want to be soon. Oh no, the laundry's blown away, I better chase that sheet. Whoa, what's down here? It's a very strangely alluring horse.
Someone had a good time drawing that horse as sexily as possible, yeah.
But luckily you can dispel any strange feelings they'd be having when it just transforms into a puff of smoke into a sexy young woman instead.
Yeah, you just throw the sheet over for modesty, and Yuki's there, kind of saying, "It's like, yeah, I saw that I said I'd have a look around because I saw her wandering around earlier."
Yes, this is Isuzu Soma, aka Rin. She is very intense and very stupid because she walked all the way here, which is I don't know how many miles down a busy highway,
And not as a horse, because I mean, like that would have made it easier.
Yeah. But her being one of the larger animals means she just hulks out of her clothing whenever she transforms. But Toru rushes back and the Sugera change her clothing because it's not just tough on the line. But she is a bit more bodacious. I don't know if this will fit her, but I'll give it to her anyway.
Yeah, better than a sheet. Yeah.
Yeah. And Yuki starts interrogating her. What the fuck are you doing here? It's like, none of your business, nerd. You're here to see somebody, are you? You're here to see Haru, Fonzie, it's none of your fucking business who I'm here to see or not. I've got something here I gotta take care of. Would you come inside? You've walked here for fucking, I don't know how long, for hours, for miles. You seem very unwell. You're probably starving. Are you okay? I'm fine. Leave me alone. Don't tell anybody I'm fucking here or I'll kill you.
She's being very tsundere, and he's just like, come on, the rest of us are waiting at the house. Might as well have a chat with us, right? But she's being kind of shitty about it. So he's like, when he says it to Toru, he's like, yeah, let's not tell anyone that she's here. Respect her wishes for the time being, at least, anyway.
Right. I gotta go take care of something. Don't worry about me. Like I said to you, Toru, I'm fine, but I just gotta go take care of something. Sorry to jump away right now. It's okay. I know you're okay, Yuki. I'll be waiting for you when you get back. He's like, thanks, Toru. Catch you again. So something's about to get stirred up here, because, as Akito in the house, throws the doors open and proclaims, bring me Keo tomorrow. I wish to see the cat. Which gets Shigeru very excited. Oh, some shit getting stirred up now. I love it. I bet you do. It's a Hattori. Fun thing to smile. You're starting to move. Isn't that right? Oh, yeah. Yep. What you pick up on here as well, if you're counting properly, is this dimensions, as Hattori said, that Kurono is a member of the Zodiac. So which one we don't know. Then Toru meets Rin, who then shows that she is the horse, and then she's got the wonder. So I've only got the rooster, the chicken to meet just yet now. I wonder who that is. You're kind of thinking, oh, is it Akido? But then, oh, it's Kurono. So then you kind of think, well, who is Akido then in the Zodiac? And then if you put it together based on the story, you go, ah, so that's why you always listen to whatever little shit tells them to do. Yeah, but that'd be a dramatic revelation for a later episode. But if you...
Yeah, still good. Still, I like the combination between, like, summer holiday shenanigans and boredom. Like, this actual, like, fucking tension of a piece of shit just acting like a piece of shit. Yeah.
But just the pettiness of it all is wielding this sway, this influence over like a whole family of people who will do anything that you say, to an extent anyway, and just reveling in it. But just I can't pick it up that nearly all these people, you know, the ones who are afraid of you aren't afraid of you anymore. And the ones that were falling over you or bowing down to you, they are laughing at you behind your back. You have no idea.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. It's just like, don't, like he's saying it to Kyo, like, to not start shit if he is to talk to her. Not to start shit, because it's like, don't let Akira know that we don't give a fuck anymore. Just like, yeah, we'll go down and sit with you. It's like, yeah, you'll call us motherfuckers for a couple of hours, and then we'll leave, because we get to leave. So, yeah, just, you can see, like, the power is slipping away, but from their point of view, it's like, I have all the power. Yeah, it's just on their little power trip.
Yeah, but, you know, there'll be a sense then of, you know, well, if I start lashing out at you and the captain, I lash out something that you all care about. Maybe this girl you all have all googly eyed over. Now, yeah, see, yeah. So you can see there's this dangerous streak, really starting to come to the fore now. So we'll see what goes on with that after this intense meeting next time.
Then you've something else you can tell me about that I didn't watch. Tower of God, episode 9, The One-Horned Ogre.
It is Betrayal City. We get dropped right in into Team B's attempt at the game attack test, and it's not.
I had to double check. I thought I skipped an episode for a sec, even though it literally picked up where it left off last episode. I was like, wait, did I fucking miss something? It's like, nope, we're starting on Betrayal.
But you know the rules, you know, you don't have to go over those again, you just get dropped out into us. And it must have not been long since it started, because everyone's split up, and there's betrayals and backstabbings going on all over the place. And Dorsey has gathered all of the fishermen type players in this, you know, the kind of the
all of you go out at the guy who's eight at once, and that way that'll slow him down a little bit. And I can determine what way he reacts to that. And that'll be part of my plan. And everyone's like, that's a weird plan, but okay.
This is going, you fucking idiots. I got all the best fighters in one place, so I take them all once handily. Why are you so dumb? And she's just like, just attacking her own guys. And then it's just all a demonstration for Bam's benefit, allegedly. It's just like, this is the way it goes, Bam. This is the way it has to be. I have a prison structure hat, but I was kind of pretty lower down in the ranking of the families there. And this family who took me in, there was like a rich guy, this adopted perspective, like,
he was adopting loads of daughters in order, like, the cream of the crop could become a princess of Jihad. And whoever wasn't top got to eat stale bread.
Everyone else got to eat fancy five-course
meals or something.
Depending
on
how well you did in your training. And, you know, I was eating stale bread all the time, and I really wanted to have the meals my sisters were having. So I thought, how could I do that? What's the best way for me to go that? So I got rid of all of my sisters and had all their meals to myself.
And it's like, wait, do you mean? It's like, yeah. What the fuck do you think I mean? And I did like the way of it where Ben's kind of saying, it's like, you understand that you're calling everyone weak and below you, but you were weak and you were below everyone else. But you know that that's not who you became. You know that someone weak can get stronger. And her kind of response to that, I like the coldness of it. It's like, I've forgotten the taste of stale bread. Like the thing, I'm on top, so I've got mine, so I'm just going to pull up the ladder after me. Thanks.
Yeah. Bye. Jerk.
Yeah, real piece
of shit. This is what you got to do, Bam. This is what your precious Michelle, is going to have to do to climb the tower and what she has done to climb this tower. Can you? Are you still on board with that? Just really trying to goad him into it. However, once he's distracted in a little monologue, one of the dudes she was beaten down on didn't mention he's got a flaming magic sword, and he shoots him with a blast.
Wait, you got a plus one sword? What the fuck?
Yeah. But Bam jumps in and takes a bullet for her. He's like, what the fuck? After going through all that, when you should have jumped away at that. Why did you do it? Because I don't want to... I just want to believe that, you know,
he's not going to climb the tower by betraying people, basically.
That's after doing that to go up. If I can't go up that way, I'll find another way. But I got to stick to my principles. Like, he's a good boy. He's a very good lad. lesser scale, like Hats is having a tough time dealing with Quant, the ranker, the examiner for this, who we know, as we know, is super hench, super OP for this, and it's easier to try and avoid him and take him head on. So it does, okay, I'll slow him down, and you two dudes with the spears, you just lob him the spears from the shadows, and...
I'll give the signal, and you guys fuck him up from out in the shadows where he can't see you're attacking from.
Yeah.
So he's doing okay, like, he's not doing okay, he gets one of his sword knocked away straight away, but he gets pinned against the wall, and he's like, yes! Now that I have a hold of him, spearman, attack! And man's looking around, he's like, are you fucking with me right now?
Spearman, attack!
But they've already legged it up the stairs because they've decided, this is a great, that's a dumb idea. This is a great plan. Let's just run the fuck away.
He's not going to beat that. He's not going to slow him down. We're wasting our time trying to get one out of his plan to get just taken.
Insta-taken out because he's...
Taken out.
Yeah.
He just teleports out and shadows himself. Ah, here you are, lads.
If they this kind of, I guess, proves Bam's point. If you had been working together, that plan probably would have worked. Oh, well.
Also, on the other side, on the other side of the arena, there's another betrayal going on. There's holes going around, and he's finally gotten Rachel by herself, which point he whips out a knife and takes her hostage, and you're coming with me. He's like, what the fuck are you doing? I got a letter telling me if I could take you out, that I'd be able to climb the tower, but you're in the way, so I gotta do what I had to do.
And it seems to be like he's using her as bait to get Bam out. It's like, so he wants to get rid of Bam, but he can get to him through Rachel.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the test coordinators have stopped the feed to the other team and goes like, shit, what are we doing? Like, one guy's going, there's like, it's fine, we'll just wait till the test's over. And he's like, what the fuck are you talking about? It's a hostage situation in there. But no, they're going to let it play out, see how it goes.
No, they got Quant in there. He's a ranker. He could probably handle this, right? Yeah, he's the stupidest dude we have, but we'll see how it goes down. But it's very tense. Toho has got Rachel at knife point. Quant shows up. It's like, hey, what are you doing, kid? Put the knife down. You know I can fucking kill you in two seconds. So let's not let it go that way. If one says, I'll do it. I'm crazy. Bam turns up again and it's what's going on? The hostage Rachel, you alright? Ho, what are you doing? This is your fault, Bam. If you hadn't arrived and just shown me up, I could have been a cool magic and water dude. It could have been me, but no. Back in my village, on my family. I was so good doing the magic, they're all impressed by it.
It's a very tragic backstory, but even his power back then didn't stop lads coming along and killing them all and stealing all their horns. They're all one-horned as well.
No, they're all one-horned, so I don't know.
Okay.
Was there any kind of human ivory harvesting going on there, what have you? I think they're just evil troll people who just butchered them all. But whatever. Not that it really matters. You're saying, well, I gotta let everyone tell me that, well, if I can just get you out of the way, then I can do it from saying this sounds like all the trick in the book. Someone sent you a letter, so it set you up and put you into this, like, frenzy, that would then get Bam, in particular, out of competition. Someone trying to take Bam out and they're using you as a patsy. Because no one talking to the guy. Well, I know, how about, how is he going to do it? If you've Quant the ranker and Bam, you fought each other.
I'm trying to remember this. The order of it as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of betrayals and literal and figurative backstabbings.
Yeah, I think he's. Yeah, I think it's like Quant to fight and to fight Bam and take him out of the game altogether, I suppose is the win. But then Dorothy turns up and she's got a plus one sword now. She can figure out what happened to the other dude. And she gets to, fight in Quant then, cause the game must proceed no matter what.
One of the reasons they also want to rush it is, Rachel gets totally fucking stabbed in the back. And if they can finish the game off, at least they can get her out of there and get her some medical attention.
Oop. So he was honking there.
Who's honking?
It wasn't me.
Okay.
Is there a goose on the line?
No, sorry. There was a delivery coming in, and there was intercom buzzing there. So apologies. Okay. It's you know, with all these folks turning up out of nowhere, all of a sudden, Rachel struggles to get free, but in the scuffle, gets stabbed in the gut.
Yeah, it's not good. And your man's hostage is gone. His plan is gone. He's completely kind of fucked. So he kind of like gives up basically. Hmm. And Dunn does stab himself.
Yeah. Stabs himself and he dies straight away. The cat burglar lady then goes up. It's like, oh no, oh, funny, you died.
Yeah, she kind of turns up on the scene. Is like, did you guys fucking stab up a bunch of people? It's like, no, it was him. He did all the stabbing. He stabbed himself then. So that's
but
more.
Sure, but the game must go on, which is why Endorsey is still fighting the rancor. We have Bam cradling, like, you know, dying Rachel in his arms. We have like the cat burglar lady was posed like dead body right there with a knife still sticking out of her, and she's just going, oh, fucking, kind of lamenting, oh, you. Big dummy. I know, but now you feel that you go through some bit of your life, you've got people like looking down on you, and you feel vulnerable, you feel weak, and you don't know what to do about it. But this isn't the way to do it. Go up, man. Just get yourself killed, and you just did. Oh, if only I'd been here, man. Maybe I could have supported you. Maybe I could have said something. Pretty sad.
Meantime, their rancor's fight is, he's like, hey, so where's your badge? You have to wear it on the outside so I can grab it off you for the tag. And she's like, yeah, it's on the inside of my jacket here. Check it out. And I was just like, the fact that you're hiding it means that that's totally not your badge.
It's definitely a fake out. Hmm.
But it seems to work on this dipshit. Even with Bam helping out, because obviously at this stage he wants to end this as quickly as possible to get, Rachel / Michelle or whatever the hell she wants to go by. Out of here and get her some medical attention. So the quicker they end it, the better.
Yeah, she just goes, whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. He's there. He has the badge. It's so quick. Barely even perceived it happening.
So she's kind of like given up and she's like all sad and she kind of leans on him. It's just like, oh, and he's like, ah, I've stolen your heart as well as your badge. He's like, no, you actually just robbed my panties. And he's like, what? It's her panties that was inside her jacket. And she now has his badge because she just basically walked up to him and pretended to cry on him.
Yeah.
She wins. Just like she planned.
Yeah. That's, you know,
with a few more stabbings than probably she planned.
Yeah. Just her, she doesn't really give a dang. She had her fun. That's all that matters.
Yeah. So we see them being rushed to, I guess, some medical thing, but I'm pretty sure like our horn guy, I'm pretty sure that guy's straight up dead, right?
Oh, he's That's the name of the game.
Yeah, I don't think they'll go back to the school, like, lunchtime setting straight after this. It'll be kind of weird, right? Dear.
Yeah, it's a fucking...
Oh, lost you there, no. Are you there, Dwayne?
It's keeping the game of tag incredibly complicated.
Okay. Yeah, so it could feel like it's very relentless almost. It's just like a lot of things like really coming to a peak all at once. So it feels like whole flying so outrageously off the handle as he does in this. It feels like it comes along like fairly suddenly. Not quite out of nowhere, but it feels like that probably could have taken more time to bubble off.
To build him up as a character and everything, yeah. That letter must have been very fucking convincing.
Yeah. But also how obvious of a ruse it is. But then they're thinking, he's trying to set up Bam then, who sent the letter. We get an idea of that because it could have been that spear or staff wielding lady whom she was in the skin tight bodysuit in the previous test, but then it got her eye taken out when Bam blew up. Bam went boom.
It could be a lot of people. It could be Coon because he's such a manipulator. There's a lot going on here. I guess we're going to have to wait for the pieces to fall in place.
Yeah, doesn't seem the announcement of Team B's victory thing. Okay, oh, well, the Bam got through, but maybe, I don't know, was that part of his plan? I think it was because he was like trying to play a numbers game to get enough points for people he wanted to go up with him. But maybe he sees this wasn't quite within the parameters I set for myself. He probably didn't realize there needed to be so many stabbings.
It's hard to predict the sheer amount of stabbings, sure.
So that may mess with his plan somewhat going forward, but we'll see. Yeah, it felt like a bit chaotic. I wouldn't mind just kind of we sit back a little bit. It doesn't need to kind of cram in so many this big intense scenes into one episode. And then like this,
yeah.
I know it's it, we're trying to work out a whole team of people in here, but a lot of them are fairly like interchangeable. This feels then so many characters come rushing on to, rushing on from stage left and then to react to. Oh no, they've been stabbed.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of plates spinning, and it's not doing a great job of keeping it going.
Yeah, yeah. Just we can get kind of reset a little bit next time and get to calm down. But on the plus side, a lot of the supporting cast have been thinned out, so maybe next episode could be a good point to jump in. There'd be less people to keep track of then.
Righty-ho. The stream dipped out there for a minute, or rather specifically I dipped out. But don't worry, podcast listener. You got most of the stuff. It was still getting used to this OBS lark. In that it was only like the briefest of blip, but I had to stop and start the stream for it to get back to normal on YouTube's end. I suspect that would not have been an issue on Twitch, as I'm slowly learning that Twitch seems a lot friendlier to streaming than YouTube actually is.
Like, YouTube's good for, like, the backup and everything, but, yeah, Twitch seems to be the go-to.
Though, in general, the connection's been much better than we've had before, but just got my computer problems. It would be not a problem if my LAN socket was working, but I've still not solved that mystery. Talking of mysteries, maybe I need to get the Wacky TV Na-Na-Na team onto the case. But in the meantime, they'll have to continue their search for the Kraken in Episode 7, Rescue, Sea Scent SOS, in which our lads are trying to attract the help of other boats. How are they going to do this? They're going to start a fire on their boat. Does not seem the safest of plans.
Also, they're burning their food stocks, but I mean, like, they're probably sick of their food stocks at this stage.
Well, they could be cooking the squid as well, but it's already smoked, so it's probably already perfectly edible. Maybe what it was a little crispier. I can understand that. if you burn this food now, you could be safe to get more food later. Ah.
This thing's really greasy. We should stick this on the fire.
No, that's
he's like,
my...
no, don't you know what that is? And it's very clear what it is because he's not wearing his skin at the time.
Come on, man. That's my good skin as well. It's really
I
good
only brought wear... one. What the fuck?
But look, there's some boats. And it's like you just throw this recklessly and naturally just tosses the skin over the side.
Yes.
Good background action, yeah.
So some boats have been attracted by the smoke, so they're going to send out messages to these boats using the pigeons. But then the pigeons just all start fighting amongst each other because they've been scared by the smoke.
They've been driven into a frenzy by smoked squid.
And the ships start heading away. But
I love those things moving in the background. It's like they suddenly appear on the horizon, they're suddenly disappearing on the horizon. Yeah,
but one
pigeon. Yeah.
He makes it to a ship, and it comes in to rescue. Well, hang on a second. Let's take a closer look at this ship. He appears to be flying a Skull and Crossbones, an old Jolly Roger, and it's the pirates they've heard so much about.
The banana pirates.
Yes, or are they plantains? I'm not sure.
Probably plantains. Yeah, they're of a darker shade. Than a regular common.
It could be just bananas that you leave out in the sun, though.
Yeah. And it ends with our heroes all tied up on board their ship, surrounded by pirates. What will happen to them next week?
They're better for us.
That's true, yes. They've definitely had worse. And I'm sure by the end of this series, they'll have had worse again. Because they still haven't encountered the Kraken yet.
They haven't come close. Yeah.
And those two giant monsters haven't shown up yet.
I mean, like, they're just going to wrestle the Kraken, right? That's.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Like,
if that's not what's going to happen, that's at least what we're expecting. But...
You got to get himself on the phone for one more time because even though they pointed it out, the audience is still. They love it. They demand it.
Yeah. Then we've got listeners, episode 9, Freedom. Oh man, I forgot to go and pick out who the other people who show up to the new festival we're holding were. Were one of them AC/DC?
Oh, yeah, because I think one of them was your man in the school uniform and out of the school uniform, yeah.
Yeah. There was, yeah, Angus Young there. To catch the anoraks and the psychobillies. I'm not sure if it meant to be a particular artist or act.
That was who I was trying to figure out, yes. You'd have to be like late 70s, like mid to late 70s bands, I would guess.
Yeah.
And then we also meet the mate of the two punks from two episodes ago, Joe, who's definitely not Joe Strummer.
No, he's too young. He couldn't possibly be him.
So yeah, as suspected, it's Echo is trying to wants to rescue Moo, get to remember who she is, that she's not Jimmy, that Tommy's convinced her that she, well, it's weird because somewhere inside her, she is there and she's talking to Jimmy. But the basic gist of the plan is they're going to hold another festival at Brighton Beach. And when everyone's there, they're going to gas them all with Teen Spirit.
It's been rebranded.
It's Purple Haze
now.
Yes. And then defeat the Earless once and for all, even if it means at the cost of everyone's free will.
It's a good old-fashioned, and then love will reign overall. It's a good old-fashioned early to mid-2000s anime villain plot. If everyone thinks and feels the same way, there'll be no more war.
Yeah. Except with robots and drugs.
And Ace is very upset about this, so Tommy kills him.
Like, he spends most of his episode, I can't believe you've done this! It's like, basically, he's incredulous to everything up to the point where he's fucking murdered.
Yes, because Tommy's had the children spying on him, and he's learnt that he's been in contact with the other two cities, with Prince and Kevin Shields, and he's therefore a traitor to their Londinium's plans.
These kids are becoming more and more sinister. When they're talking to Echo, it's like, hey, mister! Oh, how are you? Is that a cool, what do you call the things? Amp?
Equipment.
Yeah, equipment is what they call it. Is that a cool equipment? Can I have a look? And I was just like, I don't trust these fucking kids, man. They're creeping me out.
Well, they are part of a military organization.
The big conspiracy. Yeah, they talk about it as like, yeah, I want to grow up to be just like Jimmy and sacrifice my life for the nation, basically. Creepy.
Yeah, even Tommy is trying to divest himself of any kind of responsibility and saying, no, fun to see. I haven't really got much sense of self left, man. I'm just a mirror for your ambitions. This is what you wanted, Marshall Ace. You wanted to defeat the Earless. You wanted to restore order to this world. I'm just doing everything I can, everything you could have done to achieve that aim. So in a way, this is your fault.
With his talking about, like, he's just a mirror reflecting what other people's desires were, and the conversations between Moo and Jimmy, where they're kind of talking to each other's repeated reflections in, like, a mirror facing a mirror.
Yeah, and the impression I was getting is that necessarily Jimmy isn't earless, but Moo is, like, an earless who's imprinted on Jimmy and assumed his appearance.
Also, she's, like, a poor copy. Rather
yeah.
Than, yeah, I see.
Because when we see like what was happening at the original festival, and there seems to be like a feminine earless coming through the gate that he's interacting with before hell breaks loose.
Yeah, it seemed to be an implication there that he was at least putting his hand out in peace, and he thought that was the idea, but not knowing that other players in this were actually going to just shoot whatever came out of the gate, and then he's just aghast when, hey, here's Flout, and it's, oh, well, here, we finally, our dimensions are finally meeting each other, this is so nice. But they're black shadow monsters, so naturally you get fired with lasers.
Yeah. Oh, I wonder if she's both of them.
I was thinking that, there seemed to be some kind of very amorphous spirit thing, so let's possess a host, and then they coexist in one entity together.
Yeah, not so much a reflection, but a reflection on two things combined to make something new, yeah.
And I can't believe it's taken me 9 episodes to remember that, oh yeah, micro amps is the smaller version of the fraction of the ampere, which of course is mu A. And I was like, of course, why did I not associate NA with that? 9 episodes. There you go. Tells you how much I paid attention in physics.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's obviously a bit more on the nose with Echo's name.
Yeah, but I should have. Not physics, because the reason I knew it is from doing design technology, from doing circuit boards and things. Hmm. But yes, I'd not thought about it for ages. So yeah, meanwhile, Nia wants to get into the Watchtower to kill Mu, so Echo offers to help her get in, basically to try and stop her from killing Mu. We also have the sisters are basically let go by Tommy. They're no longer required. But then they reply with like a very Dada-esque statement to the point where I thought they should have just like grabbed a bunch of newspapers, chopped up the headlines and pulled the names out, the words one at a time to reply to him. As they basically, chaos gnaws away at the self. Which I wonder whether that's another lyric.
Gone through two translators, yeah.
Yes, that's where they discover the plan to use Teen Spirit, and they're double-crossed by Marshall.
He was working for them all the time, though. At the end of it, he claims it's like, no, I wasn't.
I was not aligned to any one side all this time.
Yes.
When you walk a bunch of people into a bunch of kids with guns, and then they go to jail, I feel like, yeah, that's on you.
Yeah, but he's a Shigeru Chiba voice character, so you know he's going to be a bit sneaky.
There.
That's the rules.
Hmm.
So then they get locked up, but then Joe shows up and releases Nia, but doesn't release Echo.
But he does ask, you want me to release this guy? He's like, nah, because Echo said he was going to try and stop us from fighting, and I do want to kill Mu now.
Now, the spanners that he uses to get out, were they in his pockets all along, or did they come from somewhere?
One fell out, but it didn't clearly fall out of his pocket or anything.
I was wondering, because it cuts immediately away to Marshall looking at the amp he took off of him, and so how am I going to fix this? I wonder, like, did he plant those on him before they were hauled off? But then again, Echo is an engineer, the technician, and the equipment, so he would have had it. Because he's a big fucking dummy, he probably forgot he had, oh yeah, I got tools, I could probably dismantle this lock.
It's weird the way it wouldn't show him reaching for his pocket rather than them falling out of his pocket, if that was the case, though.
Yeah, he's got one sticking out of his pocket while he's in the cell.
Yeah, so.
But he uses two of them to, like, pry apart the padlock.
Yeah, but it cuts away to Marshall for a reason, so I'd say he must have put us onto him. But as you can see, yeah, like, I've got no real allegiance with this kid, but I want him to get locked up.
He does specifically, like, save him at the end. It's like, oh, the garbage goes in the garbage can, and he just kind of fucks him out of it in order to save him from that entire fucked up situation. So it's like, it seems likely that it's some involvement, yeah.
So yeah, they go to confront Tommy and Mu, and Mu does not recognize her name, and appears to no longer be human. Tries to sacrifice Nia and Echo, and Nia saves Echo by leaping in the way. It looks like Nia's still alive though, because they were still in their giant tentacle mecha. They just got blown out of the Watchtower, and then Marshall shows up and rescues Echo, explaining that compost needs to go down this chute.
I'm just cleaning up after myself.
Yes. And he kind of wants to, he tries to convince Echo to come traveling with him, but Echo leaves on the next train to the next story.
He's going to ride the rails.
He's in the rubbish train, so I'm guessing he's going back home where all the rubbish goes.
Well, yeah. Except it looks like he's going to the crossroads. As next week we get Robert Johnston. And a deal being made with the devil at the crossroads. And I did like the preview because it was seemed to be, yeah, it basically seemed to be like talking about how rock music is trapped in the prison of the 12 bar blues. Or perhaps all pop culture has been.
Yeah. Well, they haven't learned their lesson because this is going to be the second London invasion. The second coming. They threw us out last time after we had to come over there and blew their minds, but we're going to come again.
Yeah.
You know, people will just kind of cling on to these things. So, like, obviously The Who, obviously these bands were the best because they were able to cross the Atlantic, man, and get big in the States. So they were the first ones to do it. They set the template, man. Just like, yeah, once you get to maybe try to embrace other things, and it's because something, you know, a break in America does not necessarily equate to your success or failure either. Why you always try and invade things, it seems to be a very aggressive mindset. It's just let's spread around naturally. Don't try and force it on people. And don't try and force its continuance either. If something dies off in popularity, then let it go. If it's any good, it'll become popular again.
Yeah, except of course, weirdly, like the British invasion is like a more of a construct of the people who are quote unquote being invaded than the actual people doing the invasion.
Yeah,
weird, no
like
Kinks references.
An effort by the bands or anything like that. It's just basically the way to classify it in history.
Yeah,
you know, it's written by the historians. It's like they didn't call it the First World War or anything at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
It,
yeah,
yeah, that kind of way. So they it's like, oh, it's the British invasion. I was like, no, there just happened to be a bunch of good British bands.
Yes, yeah, it's weird. No Kinks references because, because I was under the impression that the Kinks were a pretty influential band in Japanese rock music, but I guess maybe they're the one band who didn't succeed in exporting themselves to America very well, though they did.
I was talking across the Atlantic kind of stuff.
But maybe we'll get that when we get to the episode, which is clearly a Beatles reference. Maybe they'll just come thick and fast again. I have to say, I'm kind of, as much as I'm enjoying these past three episodes, I'm kind of missing the sheer gall of the initial batch of episodes.
Yeah, it's like much and lots of we're talking about the references and what it's talking about. It is very heavily into its own plot and universe right now. Just with those references, as opposed to just like, hey, it's Prince and he's going to fucking just quote himself.
Yeah. The first few episodes were the equivalent of writing your favorite band's names on your exercise book.
Yeah, pretty much.
You get more elaborate. You draw little comic strips on the inside back cover. It says, this is me. I mesh. Again, Sex Pistols. This is the adventure, grand adventure we had at Christmas time.
When you're asking, do people tip X band names onto their bags as well? Or is that my generation?
Tip X is an excellent fucking one, all right? Yeah.
Had that certainly. You get some very elaborate impressionist effects on your school pair using Tippex. You know, it was nice. It felt like you're doing a fresco, but there's no takebacks. Well, it was.
I don't think Tippex was like as big a thing when I was a kid, but there were still remnants of it on the lockers. stuff doesn't wash off that easy.
Yeah, Tippexing desk was more of a widespread thing, at least initially in our school, and then it cracked down on it. Oh, yeah. Tippex your bag. Fuck the man.
Good stuff and quality still holding up. 9 episodes. In fact, even ignoring the fact coronavirus is a thing, few shows are consistent this far into a single season.
It's possibly like anything that's lasted this long has taken the time needed to do it rather than rushing it. So that therefore it's also lasted a disaster.
Yeah.
This is good planning for you.
I think this is the season which shows you what the difference between a good schedule and a bad schedule gets you. If you had a good schedule, you're still on the air. Talking of things still on the air, Wave, Listen to Me, episode 9, I Won't Believe You, in which we get a proper look at Minare's terrible ex-boyfriend.
What a heel.
He is, but yeah, it's a weird thing of like, she basically doesn't want to, well, first of all, she wants to like do a terrible setup, which is going to break all sorts of broadcasting rules.
Yeah, your man like knocks her down straight away. It's like, I'm going to fucking fuck him out of it on air, make him look like a real prick.
And he's dox like, him yeah, live.
We need his permission to do that, and he could sue us still after, so yeah, no.
And who would want to send in any texts or emails or faxes afterwards if you know what's going to spew
yeah,
out?
Yeah, if you rip up a new one, basically. Hmm. It's going to be a very hostile fucking show, so it's not going to last very long.
So find out on a more creative way to fuck up his shit, all right? And mess with good radio within the law.
Yes. I feel like his plan is that you should go on a date. The idea is to go on a date with him. And I feel like the producer's idea is this will somehow aggravate her and then
it'll get her like riled up for a good show. That is nothing to do with that. Yeah, for sure. I think that's what he's going for.
And so, yes, they go on a date. They take a cable car up a mountain and then they go back to his place. But then we also learn that they went to a whole bunch of other places in between.
I did like her realization, like, holy shit, I've been with him all fucking day. We had loads of fun thing. God,
we went on a date. Ah, you tricked me. But she goes there, you know, really wanting to.
She's gone there, like, on the full war path. Like, she's wearing a very hostile outfit, and she realizes, like, oh, he likes the plain lip look. Time for the real fucking rouge. It's just, like, war paint going on.
I love that shot as well when she poops it out, because it is like she's drawing the sword out of the scabbard.
Yeah, it's very aggressive. It's good.
Opens the lipstick, yeah. Mm-hmm. But he's being strangely nice, and also he pays her back a bit of the money that...
I think he pays her back a whole amount, doesn't he?
No, half. He gets half of what he owes her at the moment. Okay. Oh, I get the rest of you for the end of the year, I promise. But then, you know, it could be nice. You can already see the scheme is like, oh, well, he's just going to, hold on to that half of the money or just like be blown towards it and still have this excuse for being in her life now. He's just trying to worm his way back in. And she's kind of caught on to that, but she's second guessing herself because, oh, maybe he's just being actually nice to her. No, but.
She's kind of fallen into the old habits, I think it is. It's like, this is comfortable. This is a person who you know your boundaries and stuff with, so it's very easy to fall into those old habits.
Yeah. And I think the thing, she's constantly, like, pointing out his bad habits, but also making a point to, like, constantly say, but there's these other things which are good about him.
Yeah, exactly. You can see the bad things on my way because you're used to him, but also you can see the good things that you did like about him, which is why you were with him in the first place. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just a kind of thoughtfulness that would remember this pastry you love from your hometown or a place you lived in for a while, and while he's passing through, he picked one up for you. Even though it was stuffed into his pocket, but he appreciated the gesture nonetheless.
Because, the key breaking point at the end of the episode is not that he's been unpleasant to her, it's that he's been unpleasant to another woman. The reason he's got the money to pay her back is because he's borrowed a load of money off another woman.
I fucking love her. Like, we're watching another show this season about very smart people being detectives, and she has such a good gotcha motherfucker moment.
It was so... it was just a very very threatening aura, to put it that way. I'm just guessing, like, you know, there's, like, big horror film fans on the part of the manga author, and I'd say a few of the production crew as well, just, like, the way they framed, like, her dark impulses to, you know, just like Google word to how to buy a hunting rifle and shoot this guy.
She reaches back for a cooking magazine with the venom of someone reaching for a knife. It's very well done.
And this points out, you're the kind of guy, you know, you just want to go out and just, you're trying to save money. You're trying to cook for yourself. I don't want to save money. You want to get food in cheap restaurants. Yeah. But what's this little free paper with quick recipes in it that can be done with little to no money? No, you normally would throw, like, no anostas, but why just pick it up then if you didn't want it and throw it in the bin? Also, see this right here. Zooms in. Zoom in, enhance. It was like the desiccated seed of a bell pepper there. Now, what
recipe in here calls for a bell pepper. I want to guess a nice Chinese stir fry, your favorite fucking meal. So, y'all. Because you had somebody coming along, and they've been minding you, they've been cooking for you, they've been cleaning your ears out, which is, I know, I that's a thing that couples do in Japan, at least, it's like to clean each other's ears out. It's meant to be very relaxing and affirms the bond, but whatever.
Well, it's there's an intimacy to it as well. You're putting yourself in a vulnerable position with someone else to help you. Yeah.
Yeah. And I bet as well that's how you got the money to pay payback as well. So I will not have you been up to your same old shit with women minding you all the time if you need to pay to get my money back off you.
It's a really good moment because it's basically like most of this fucking show, she's been really mad at this guy. He's like, I'm going to fucking kill him for me kind of thing this entire time. But now she's like, oh, you're fucking over someone else. Mm-mm, not going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's more so she like feels the need to defend other people more so than herself. I mean, it's still a little selfish, but yeah.
Well, she can chide herself for being the fool because she was fooled off to fall into it, but she won't let that be at the expense of somebody else. My dumbass mistakes are my own, but I don't want to spill over that and hurt somebody else.
Yeah.
Case in point, to try and not do something stupid like leave meat rotting in the floor to traumatize her neighbor downstairs. Trying to not do that kind of stuff anymore.
Oh, that poor man.
Yeah. And I think the ear cleaning thing is supposed to indicate that he is genuinely in love with her over the other woman. He's just deceiving the other woman to get
the money. Yeah, but he's just willing to screw another woman over.
Exactly. Because it's the fact that
he wants to get the relationship going, I think is the indication from this for sure. But it's just like, he will fuck around for his own benefit.
Yeah, he's the line about just how dirty his ears are. It indicates that no one else has been cleaning his ears in this way before in between times. But because you feel like, if there wasn't someone else being affected, then maybe she would have continued to put up with his bullshit again. And they'd be back together as foolishly as that
and probably fall apart as much as in probably exactly the same way. He'd borrow too much money and never pay it back again or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fall into old habits and exactly the same thing.
Yeah, because he said a whole bunch of lies as well about where he's got the money from, about, it was these secret stocks. I went to the horse racing. but at the same time, he's not, the way he behaves is not in, like, he doesn't seem, he's open and charming and not sinister, and he wears a weird red version of, it feels like the cut of it feels like the later series Star Trek top that Kirk wears, the sheer length of the V-neck.
I do like the way there's like a thing between them, and obviously she gets his good points and his bad points immediately. So there's an intimacy there and there's an honesty there, but you can tell he's also being obtrusive and fucking lying through his teeth as well. Yeah.
Well, just even the fact that she can just really suss him out. She's fallen for his charms, but can just still suss these things out. She's pondering him to herself, well, having a brush with death, it can really change a person. So maybe, he's acting nice today because he's genuinely trying to be better.
But yeah, she's trying to see him as a changed person, but then she puts fucking the pieces together. It's like, no, hasn't changed one goddamn bit.
Not one bit. Like, it's just, no. And I can see why someone would want to fucking stab the shit out of you. I mean, I was going to shoot you dead yesterday. So you're just that kind of really irritating person to be around, it seems.
Yeah, my favorite line is when she's annoyed that he hasn't got any poison in his house for her. To poison him with.
I love the stuff earlier when she runs home to her wife as like, honey, and everyone's like, what? Where she's going on and on about the fact that she couldn't like get a gun quickly enough.
Yes.
It's like, oh, it's terrible to get a license. And I was just like, Jesus Christ. She's actually looked into it, so that's not good.
Yeah. Can I borrow a computer? Please not put it in my search history. I beg of you.
But it also was a nice change of pace for an episode because it was it was very much focused on the one story for a change, whereas a lot of the series so far has been like a mix of the radio and the restaurants
and the other characters
and the other character
stories
as well.
It's done a good job of bouncing between them, but it hasn't been as focused. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it makes. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily want it to be this focused all the time, but at this point in the series, it's nice to have like a break from that to get your breath back a bit.
And then we've come to know her so well that it's like she can carry an episode just following her entirely. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. We're straight back in next time, though. In the studio, we're going to do the radio drama version of this of this relationship thing anyway, with two famous Foley artists in the booth as well.
And the fact that her like imagining of this was, again, that sci-fi thing where she murders him, it's kind of like, I feel like that could be fun.
Actually, just thinking along those lines, at least subconsciously, is that, oh yeah, this can make a good anecdote for the radio show. I can probably spin into something.
Righty here, that is everything you guys watched. Do you both watch the Doro Hedoro?
I watched the first one of this, yeah.
We'll save that, though, for a future episode, because I will also watch the first episode.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
we'll save that in case things aren't back to normal come July, which they probably
won't
be.
Seems likely.
It may all rely on Tokyo Governor, whether she shuts things down again.
Yeah.
I do recommend that online game where you play as her flying around the city, breaking up crowds of people and forcing them to social distance.
What's that, like a Flash game or something?
Like no, it's a Unity game.
Oh, sure, yeah, fucking wouldn't be Flash, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not familiar. I very rarely play online games. So, yes, I was like, oh, this is powerful, and I guess I now have a powerful enough computer that it will run this game without causing too many problems. But, yeah, you just run around an increasingly sized area of the city trying to hunt down people who are grouped together and tell them off, and then they'll stand further apart.
I guess virus talk, like, have they completely reduced social things? Like, groups of, what's it here now? I think it's groups of six or something is now the allowed thing.
Fuck if I know.
Yeah.
Fuck if I know.
No.
I'm having a hard time keeping track of who's doing what with everything, yeah.
Yeah, I think in Japan, I don't think it's yet, but I think the plan was like events with less than 50 people. I mean, all of the information
Jesus,
I'm getting.
Okay, that's considerably restricted.
They there's like certain restaurants of a certain size with enough spacing are able to open. It depends if your ward or prefecture is allowed to, because there are still certain parts of the country that are under a more stringent restriction than others.
Yeah.
I mean, my information is all coming via the Wrestling Observer podcast and the Wrestling Observer, because it's entirely shot through the prism of when can New Japan start running shows again.
That's not a bad way to follow it. You have your man who's going around to all the sweet shops, so I assume he's on fucking point.
But also New Japan are one of the most responsible wrestling companies during the outbreak so far, that they have run zero shows.
As opposed to like nobody sitting in the crowd shows, yeah.
Yeah. That'll be their first step when they do come back, will be nobody sitting in the crowd shows. But yeah, I'm sure they're going to probably be more sensible than other organisations. And yeah, they've taken, rather than let anybody go, lots of people at the top of Bushiroad have taken pay cuts in order to carry on paying.
Oh, that's decent.
Everybody. Yeah.
Some sports are back on. I can report from work anyway. There is a snooker tournament in glorious Milton Keynes happening right now. So there's just two players and a referee, and there's like two techs, I think.
And a snooker table is pretty long, so it's easy to keep further apart. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Some of the Scandinavian, actually European, because there's quite a lot of them as well, club football league has started up again. Like the Danish Super League has been on. And again, it's just the two teams. They've very carefully vetted, or well, they say they have anyway, and no crowds, but they do pipe in like atmos of people in the crowd over the game, so it feels less weird, but it makes it more weird because then it feels like it's a pitch of lads playing to an audience of ghosts. So
that's strange.
I don't know.
Okay.
But there's a big uptick in events now. I think certain sports, I wouldn't be surprised now if the golf can come back in some way, because that is one you can play at a great distance.
Yeah.
Or that coming down the way. You know, it's been getting a lot busier. There is this very real Earth trying to get through the backlog, I suppose, of things that we some kind of results of these various leagues and competitions.
I guess it's going to be like the same with the cartoons as well, but we'll see if reducing restrictions earlier is fucking worse in the long run. We'll find out pretty fucking soon, unfortunately.
Yeah, I've had a very, kind of stressful weekend just gone. It was just going off for a walk and there was just this, real kind of lack of any kind of,
People think the restrictions are entirely zero now, is it?
Any kind of awareness or any kind of consideration. Now that's just people can be just arseholes at any time of the year now, really. Sure.
But it's a dangerous time to be an arsehole right now.
Yeah. They just be like, it's sunny, it's fine, let's all go outside, and let's not even give a damn about anybody coming near you. And it was just really just coming in on top of you, wherever you go. And there was this real sense that, it's like the last 2 months never happened, gee, is it? And.
Yeah. Dude, it's a beautiful day out, so when I do have to go out and get some groceries, I do not generally go out for my own fucking pleasure, I'm wearing those little plastic gloves, I'm wearing my mask, and I'm sweating fucking buckets because goddamn that makes you really warm, but it's just like I gotta do it. It's the decent thing to fucking do.
I just wonder, like, why did you endure all of those weeks of that if you didn't learn a rattling damn of a thing of it? Rattling damn, like. But then I had to gain perspective. I can't be responsible for their safety if they don't want to be open. So I just need to kind of mind out for myself and the people I care about, and be just mindful in general. Just if they want to, like. If we reckless, then fine. It's their ass. I'm not going to escalate things with them. But then, like, by me trying to avoid people seem to escalate things with them, because I've had some run-ins with some fucking pretty nasty characters the last couple of days now. Oh, I don't know what the deal is.
Tensions rising everywhere, I suppose.
When I've been out, I've only encountered dog walkers and dogs. But then
dogs wearing masks?
Nobody was wearing masks except me. But then I have the advantage of not being in a major metropolitan city, and also if I walk in the opposite direction that I used to walk, I'm in the countryside pretty quickly. Much quicker than I thought I would be. I'd take a left turn at the allotments and suddenly you're down a path which is not a path at all, except for the fact that people have probably been walking on it for centuries and have completely flattened it out. So I have to go further investigate that as my stamina comes back and I can walk further. But turns out coughing for 6 weeks does still leave you with a bunch of aching muscles that you weren't aware of when you go back outside. I might get a bit more walking done this week because the weather's cooling down for a period. We'll get some rain. But, goodness knows what it would be like if I went, townwards. And,
it's your ass, like I said.
Exactly. Righty-ho, what time next week is a good time for us to record again?
When will we three meet again? Tuesday the 9th?
Yep, 7:30 or 8:30.
7:30, yeah. Well, we could do it if you want to keep it. If you've got anything else, I'll always do it Wednesday at 8:30.
7:30 is best for me, I think. Because
Dwayne, do you got anything on any games?
I don't think I have anything planned, so I can plan around Wednesday. Then that's fine.
Tuesday.
Wait, did you say Wednesday or Tuesday? Tuesday that in my calendar.
Tuesday with the option of Wednesday, but we'll go with Tuesday the 9th.
We'll say Tuesday then. That's grand.
Lucky number 9.
Okie dokie, we'll be back here around 7:30, but probably 7:45. But we'll be here at 7:30. that is it. We'll be back here next week with more of this. Everything seems to be carrying on, so we don't need to worry about things dropping off yet. Let's end the stream. Goodbye.
Adios.
And now, dear listener, we'll say goodbye to you as well.
Adios.